Welcome back, everybody, to the Roll Skis podcast. I'm your host, Liam O'Keefe, and we have a great episode full of fun stuff to talk about today. We're going to talk about the home teams of, you know, the Connecticut area, the Jets, the Giants, and the Patriots. We're going to bring up Sam Darnold and the Seattle Seahawks. How have they been doing? Pretty good. We haven't talked about them enough yet, it feels like. We're going to bring up the Dallas Cowboys. We've talked about them a fair amount, but, you know, with every week, you learn a few new things. And then we're going to go Baker Mayfield and have a real, true, honest conversation about where you should be putting Baker Mayfield in your power rankings, in your MVP rankings, in all rankings in general. We're going to have the real, honest conversation about Baker Mayfield. And then to wrap it up, there was no UConn football this weekend, but there was UConn basketball, and that is, you know, the cream of the crop. That's what you're here for. That's what you live for. We're going to have a nice conversation about the men's and women's teams taking on Boston College in some exhibition matches. Both teams taking home big W's. We'll dive a little deeper into that later, but for now, let's just roll right into these football games. We'll start off with the saddest of the teams. There were two great wins and one really sad loss. We'll start with the New York Jets, the team that took another sad loss. They are the only team without a win this year, sitting at 0-6. God. Poor Jets fans, man. They woke up at 9 in the morning to watch their team play the Broncos in London, just for Justin Fields to look the worst ever. He sucks. I don't need to beat a dead horse even more. He sucks. Everyone knows he sucks. He had negative 10 total passing yards. Oh my God, dude. He just holds the ball way too long. He takes way too many gross sacks. For a guy whose main trait and selling point is that he's very mobile, he doesn't get away and run every once in a while. He tries so hard to, like, look at nothing. No receiver is going to be as wide open as you need to be for Justin Fields to give you a completed pass, especially now that Garrett Wilson's out. They're screwed. They genuinely, they're going to have the first overall pick. There's no doubt in my mind about that. You look at their schedule, where do you find a win? They are sad right now. It's really horrible to see. Aaron Glenn, I don't even want to put a lot of the blame on him because it feels like what they're doing is, like, schematically okay. I just genuinely think Justin Fields, who they gave a massive contract to, can't complete the actions that you need to run a football team. He can't throw the ball in rhythm. He can't throw the ball at all. And he just takes so many ugly sacks. There's, you know, it really is over for them. You're 6 weeks into the season and you're looking at mock drafts and how likely you are to end up with the number one overall pick and what quarterbacks are good. Not many, by the way, for a class that we thought would have great quarterbacks coming out of it. Drew Aller sucks. Cade Klubnik sucks. Garrett Nussmeier, mid. You know, who else is there? There's a... It's over. Like, the guys that you thought would be, like, the cream of the crop here really didn't show out at all. There's, like, Dante Moore, he's not that good either. Lenora Sellers, that would be my guy, you know, go Gamecocks football, but that's about it. The Jets, you know, yeesh. Sellers' comp is almost a little Justin Fields-esque. You might be doing the same thing over if you take him and he doesn't, you know, turn out the way you hope he does. So it's a really rough look for them. I really don't even want to waste my time on it. They made it close, though. Shout out special teams. They made it close. It was you know, not a beatdown. The defense played well. We got to have a serious conversation about Bo Nix. He doesn't look great. He's had some good performances here and there, but throughout this whole, like, season, he hasn't strung together something crazy. It doesn't look super awesome. I don't love it. I'd never truthfully love Bo Nix, just to get that statement out there right now. I was never the world's biggest Bo Nix fan of all time, but he hasn't proved me wrong that he's not that good of a quarterback. So Denver, they're very much so in the race for the AFC West because the Chiefs have started kind of funky and the Chargers fell off a little bit. I imagine they're still more of a wild card threat than people give them credit for just because their defense is so amazing and Bo Nix can put together good games here and there. So I'm not totally writing them off, but it was an ugly, ugly one to start off the weekend. Going back, though, to Thursday, that was not an ugly one. That was a it was an ugly one for Philadelphia fans. But for the rest of us, that was not an ugly one. Jackson Dart and the New York Giants are taking over. Every week when we talk about Jackson Dart, I get a little more positive on him every time because he shows me a little more every time, and that's exactly what I've been needing to see. He's good, man. He's willing. He's accurate. He had some rough, you know, growing pains in the second game, but he hasn't turned the ball over that much. He does take massive thumping hits all the time. That dude is very willing to run, which is a good thing, but also very willing to get hit, which is a bad thing. It's just a bad thing. You know, Jaden Daniels was also very willing to run and get hurt. And what happened? He got hurt and he missed a couple games. So you really need to be careful with guys like that. It's nice that you're willing to put it all out there, but also we need you for next week. So slide a little bit, get out of bounds. That's one of the few negatives that I've seen out of Jackson Dart's game recently. He's been doing incredibly well. Cam Scadaboo, of course, they're like a tandem. You can't talk about one without talking about the other guy. Scadaboo looks fantastic too. He's running through walls and making people feel really, really silly. So it's always good to see that out of a running back. I'm curious how long he's going to be in the game for, because he takes these major hits and his whole thing is that, you know, he's the CTE monster. He's white boy CTE demon, you know. But, like, it is what it is. Good stuff for them. Philadelphia, though, as I drop my phone, oh my goodness. Philadelphia, it's never been more over than it is right now. They just look sad, defeated, just like soggy bread is the best comp I could have for them. No one has any fight. No one wants to go out there and compete and play and win. And they're starting to get, you know, they're losing guys to injury. They're losing guys to retirement. Za'Darius Smith just up and retired this week. He was low-key their best edge rusher. Jalen Carter's hurt. Their offensive line is, you know, injury-riddled. It's just bad, bad vibes all over the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't love it. And this isn't the first time that the Eagles have had bad vibes. They've been able to turn it around. Winning fixes a lot. They've lost their last two games, so that's why it feels especially heavy that they're playing very poorly, but it kind of still feels different. They need something to go their way. They need a big game to get back on track. We need Jalen Hurts to start airing that sucker out. They just need to reimagine their whole offense because it's really bad for Saquon and it's really bad for the weapons. They're running like the evil Eagles offense. The anti-Eagles offense is what they're running. They're not, you know, there's not a lot of big play action. There's not a lot of shots downfield with their big wide receivers because that would force them to respect what the wide receivers can do and take away those big plays, which would allow Saquon Barkley to face lighter boxes, and then he would, of course, go insane. But instead, they're just not doing that, and so teams can just throw a million guys in the box, and so Saquon's not really having his best year, and A.J. Brown's not really having his best year, and Devontae Smith really isn't having his best year, and Jalen Hurts isn't really having his best year. And it's all coming together in the worst ways possible. They're still 4-2, and they still have I'm the lead in their division for now. Washington, I'm sure, will be looming. But, oh my goodness, like, it's over, dude. Like, it's just so, ew, bad vibes. I don't know if you can turn that around in the season. Maybe that's an off-season thing when they maybe get a few new coaching changes in there, some personnel moves. But as of right now, it's looking very just uninspiring, not what you want to see out of your football team 6 weeks into the year. They were 4-0. They've lost their last two. And even when they were 4-0, everyone could kind of see the vibes weren't perfect. They were just kind of squeaking out good games through the talent that they have on their roster alone, and that was it. And now even that's not happening, so they need to change something up. I don't know when their bye week is, when they can really sit back and assess what they are and who they are as a team, but it sounds like they are in desperate need of that. And then we can roll right on through. That's all I really have to say about that game. I've made my opinion clear on both of those teams. The New England Patriots, baby. How about them? They're insane. Drake May just keeps going at it. he's better and better every single week. And they, like, the referees, and it's so, you know, funky, lame to blame the referees. The referees did not want the Patriots to win this game. I don't know if anyone followed along and listened to it. Oh my goodness. There were at least three major plays in the Patriots' favor that were just wiped off the board for nothing. They would show the replay and both guys, like, commentating the game would be like, what the hell are you talking about? The fact that referee group core hasn't been, first of all, fired. It was disgusting work. It really was. I need to get this out of my system now. It was disgusting work that those referees were doing, and they should be fired. They haven't, whatever. They should have at least been fined or put under investigation. They wiped away, like, a 60-yard touchdown, a 50-yard gain to Stephon Diggs, like, a major, and then they wouldn't call the same thing. They were back-to-back plays. Stephon Diggs had a huge bomb on third down, and he caught it. And then they said, like, he pushed off, and he maybe did, but it wasn't anything you would normally call. And then literally the next play, Mac Hollins down the sideline. It's a shot for shot, like, replay. But Hollins is now the one being held, and it's very obvious, and they don't call it. It was unreal what they were doing. I needed to get that off my chest, first of all. These goddamn refs make me so upset. Patriots still won. It was the Saints. They took care of the Saints. But the Patriots have their guy. He's top 10. He's MVP race, dark horse type of stuff going on. All of that is very true. All of that's very real. I'm so very bought in. The team as a whole is a little weaker than I'm thinking. It is winning because of Drake May, not Drake May winning because of the team. The running game sucks. Ramondre Stevenson had 18 yards on 13 carries. What the hell does Mike Vrabel need to see out of Travion Henderson before he starts giving him more carries? It's ridiculous at this point. Travion Henderson is the more explosive back. He's the more like reliable back. You can't trust Ramondre Stevenson to hold on to the football and execute like basic stuff. He doesn't really catch the football that well. That's what Travion Henderson does. I don't know what they need to see in order to get him on the field more, but it's getting a little crazy. Their running game is so bad, and they try and run the ball all the time, and it's just a wasted play. I don't know if it's the offensive line's fault because they've been fine in pass protection, but I don't know if maybe they just can't run block, but it's rough. Their running game, they need to be in the market for a running back, and I'm sure that's something we'll start talking about trade predictions probably next episode, but as of right now, we've got this to do. But Drake May still looks fantastic. Their running backs, not so much. Their wide receivers are very whatever. Stephon Diggs has been hot and cold. Kayshon Boutte has been hot and cold as well. Demario Douglas had his first good game all year, which was nice to see. But they're very inconsistent. They're not real NFL wide receivers that they're working with for the most part. I still think they should make a trade. Bring Jacoby Myers home or get Chris Olave if he's at a fair price from the Saints, who we just saw. Chris Olave played a very, very nice game. Even from the first jump, he was fantastic. He burned Kyle Duggar for 50 yards. Kyle Duggar is a shell of his former self. He really needs to get back to it or get cut. He just stinks really, really bad right now. But Chris Olave put on quite a game. He had one or two tough drops, which obviously don't look great, but he was, you know, it was tight coverage both times. It wasn't like he was wide open. He still played a very good game, I thought. Rashid Shaheed was shut down. He didn't make a single play. He was not, you know, no big bombs. He wasn't noisy whatsoever. Spencer Rattler, though, I'm impressed. I've seen a lot of what I've needed to see from Spencer Rattler to the point where I will call him a guy that the Saints should try and build around. I don't want to use the word franchise just yet, but he's a guy you can and should build around. I'm very, very interested to see how they go about that, especially with this trade deadline looming. Are they going to be sellers? Are they going to be buyers? Are they going to be quiet? There's a lot that could go on and could change this franchise, you know, this franchise's trajectory. But then let's move on. Sam Darnold and the Seattle Seahawks, they are just out of this world right now. They took on, oh my goodness, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Sorry for the brain fart. I was staring right at the picture. I couldn't get the name. They took on the Jaguars and they got the win 20-12. The Jaguars were hot. They were coming off a Monday night victory against the Chiefs. Then Seattle came in. Jackson, Smith, and Jigba, and Sam Darnold. Such an elite connection. It's unreal, the stuff that we're witnessing from Sam Darnold's like perspective right now. He looked, like, think about just 3 years ago. He was the backup in San Francisco coming off his time in Carolina where he looked unplayably, like, he just looked bad. Just super awful stuff. He's turned it around. He learned. He took time. He, you know, the Shanahan tree. He looked fantastic. He got his chance again in Minnesota. Then he took the entire world by storm. Gained a major contract with Seattle. And I was a little nervous. I didn't know how. They gave a lot of money to a guy who really only had one good NFL year. But it's paid off. He looks unreal. He's indistinguishable from the Sam Darnold of years past. If you slapped a different number and nameplate on that guy, I wouldn't have known it was Sam Darnold 2 years ago. So it's been super impressive to see the type of things that he's been able to do. And a lot of it has come from Jackson Smith and Jigba being arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL. He had 160 yards today, and that's just what you come to expect from him at this point. He's unreal. He has blossomed into an elite wide receiver one. When Seattle traded away DK, they said, all right, JSN, this is your team. Let's see what you can do with it. And he's taken every single opportunity and ran with it. From the beginning of this game, I think the first five completions Sam Darnold had were all to JSN, and they were bombs and touchdowns and major plays. This guy, he can do it all. It's unreal. And they've been asking him to do it all. The running game has been so-so for Seattle. It hasn't been super fantastic. Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet have been splitting touches a lot, which kind of surprised me first off. And they're both at the same level of production, it feels like, too. I'm not really sure what's going on with that, if that's more of an offensive line thing or a play caller thing or a player thing. Maybe they've just kind of, you know, down years happen for a reason. But we really need to sing the praises of Sam Darnold. And it's similar to the praises of Baker Mayfield, who we can just talk about right now because it's a nice segue. Oh my goodness. Baker Mayfield, baby. MVP conversation, incredibly there, incredibly worthy of it happening. And there's only 2 5-win teams in the league. Baker Mayfield's Buccaneers and Daniel Jones's Indianapolis Colts. It's unreal. Like, I'm at a loss for words. Imagine telling someone that 2 years ago. Imagine telling someone that like 7 weeks ago before the season started. Yeah, being like, yo, Daniel Jones and the Colts are going to be 5-1. Sam Darnold and the Seahawks are going to be 4-2. And Baker Mayfield and the Bucs are going to be 5-1. What? Like, obviously Baker had been a little more established than those two guys before. But they've all been, you know, in the same thought process. Young quarterbacks who just didn't pan out in their original teams. And I genuinely think this is going to be a change in philosophy. Quarterbacks are going to get a lot more time than they used to have in the years prior. You move off a guy way too fast. And it brings up the question, what happens with the guys now who we have the bust label on? What happens to a guy like Anthony Richardson is the first thing that comes to my mind. He is injured right now. He tore his eye here. Like, he hurt something in his eyelid during warmups, and he had to go to the hospital. It was insane. But, you know, what do you do with a guy like Anthony Richardson now? You've just seen Baker Mayfield, Daniel Jones, and Sam Darnold all have amazing career resurgences in different situations with more time and more knowledge under their belt, and they've transformed into these amazing quarterbacks, amazing winning quarterbacks. So a guy like Anthony Richardson, who was just tools, can he come in, find another home somewhere else? Like Sean McVay, can you trade him to the Rams and have him learn under Matt Stafford and Sean McVay for a little bit? And then when Stafford retires in 3-ish years or whenever he decides to hang up the cleats, do you have a guy in Anthony Richardson? That's something, if I were the Rams, I'd be very interested in. And if I was the Colts at this point, I would be interested in. I feel like if you can get any sort of upside, intriguing value for Anthony Richardson, you have to, because of how good Daniel Jones has looked. You're not going to hand the keys over to Anthony Richardson again. You're not even going to have a quarterback battle next year at this rate. Daniel Jones has just taken this team and flown away. Now we can get, back to Baker Mayfield. He is, as of right now, my most valuable player. I don't think anyone in the league is playing as good as him. And it's not just the play, it's the situation. Tristan Wirfs has been out. Chris Godwin has been out. Mike Evans has been out. They're on, I think, their fourth starting right guard of the season already. Emeka Egbuka, he has been playing out of his mind. He left this game middle of the game. I can't remember exactly when, with a hamstring injury. So he was working with Tez Johnson and Sterling Shepard. It's not this crazy great roster like you're used to expecting with them. He's been making it work with guys who are wide receiver fives and sixes. It's ridiculous. He's been playing just incredibly good football, and he's been running the ball very well. I know if you watch the game, you remember that 3rd and 14. He took off. He looked like he was going to get sacked. He ran probably like 30 yards in those 14 yards right there. He's going back and forth, east and west. It's incredible the way he's, grown as a creator and as a leader. It feels like he's a little more mature now. He's, of course, talking all that smack still, but it's great to see him do his thing. I'm very, very happy to watch guys turn their careers around. I thought he got a raw deal going to Cleveland. So it's just, you need to appreciate guys like that when they're here. Good stories, always rooting for them. Maybe, we talked about Anthony Richardson. Maybe Bryce Young, maybe we shouldn't be so quick to give up on him. That's another name that comes to mind. And you just have to wait and see. There's a lot of young quarterbacks in these areas. You've just got to give them time, let them develop. Because there was a reason they were so highly drafted in the first place. It's not just like they were horrible and you brought them in and they were horrible. They had the traits, and you need to sometimes let them adjust to the speed of the game. And I know it's easy for me to say that than it is for a coach to actually give them that time, because every coach that brought in that quarterback got fired. And of course, you have to think about that at the time, but it's what you have to do. I think this is going to be a change in the culture of the NFL. You're going to be able to give your quarterback more time and probably give your coach a little more time, because he can point to the other guys now. He's like, look at what Baker Mayfield became. He's so much better now. But he was fired, his coach was fired. He didn't have that chance. And so I think guys are going to have a little more leeway now than they used to with front offices. We just talked about Bryce Young. We can switch it up now. We can move on to the Carolina Panthers beating the Dallas Cowboys in Carolina. What a win it was for these Carolina Panthers having Dallas come to your hometown and then absolutely going band for band with Dallas. It was exactly what happened. They went at it and it looked fantastic. But like, Dak played a beautiful, beautiful game of football and they still lost. Bryce Young played well. He played a fine game of football. He has just like a couple weird goofball turnovers that aren't always necessarily his fault. I didn't think the stuff that he had this game was his fault, but he still is prone to a few of those a game, whether it's his limited athleticism or whatever it may be. But we're going back to the Dallas conversation. Every single week we go back to talking about the Dallas Cowboys, and it's because they're weird every week. They fought the Eagles close and lost. They fought the Giants close and won. They tied with the Packers, who everyone expected to be much better, and they're still kind of funky. And then you lose to Carolina, all on the back of some fantastic performances from Dak Prescott and George Pickens, who's been playing out of his mind. His full potential is totally been unlocked. It's insane to see just how good he's been without CeeDee Lamb. He's taking on your wide receiver one. He has the defense's full attention, and he's averaging over 100 yards a game easily. It's insane. Malcolm Brogdon is retiring from basketball. That I just saw like breaking news from Shams on my phone because I have my itinerary up and I had to check it. All you New York Knicks fans, Malcolm Brogdon has decided to retire. good, you know, solid career. After 9 seasons, he was a rookie of the year. He was a sixth man of the year. He was on my Boston Celtics when he won that. Good for him, man. Well, after my intermission with basketball real quick, the Cowboys, their defense is just too miserable. I really feel like this is the story of their season. What are they, 2-3-1? It's because their defense sucks. Their offense has been playing out of this world. They haven't had CeeDee Lamb, and they've been putting up great numbers once he comes back, which I'm pretty sure he's practicing this week. I don't know if he will play this week. Regardless, once he comes back, their offense is going to be unstoppable. But their defense is not. It's the Bengals light. They from last year when they had Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and Joe Burrow all playing at an elite level, and their defense playing at a far, 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 far from elite level. So we just have to accept that that's who they are this year. Hopefully they can turn it around and get some more defensive talent through the trades that they've received for Micah Parsons. They didn't get a major bag. You can't look around and be like, wow, they got this major bag from the Micah Parsons thing. They're going to have no problem rebuilding their team. They are going to have a problem rebuilding their team. They never make splash plays in free agency anymore. Their drafts haven't been the best in the world for a while now. And they're slowly becoming less and less irrelevant as time goes on. The fact that they're the Cowboys are saving them right now. They're squandering a Dak Prescott MVP year through just having the worst defense of all time. And you hate to see it, but that's the only way I can see the rest of their season going on. Unless major things happen at the trade deadline, they can be a cool 8-8-1 and miss the playoffs. And then next year, maybe we'll say whatever we'll say about them. But I'm kind of done talking about Dallas. As for Carolina, we talked about Bryce Young. Tet McMillan, good breakout game, a couple touchdowns. He had some good plays where he was wide open. He was shaking guys left and right. Rico Dowdle, I would be remiss if we did not talk about Rico Dowdle. 400-something yards in his last 2 games. Unreal stuff. Things we've literally never seen before. This came against his former team, the Dallas Cowboys, so I'm sure there was a little extra chip on his shoulder to prove to them who he was and how he was playing after they let him walk in free agency. It's just good, you know, good to see for a guy like that. The Carolina Panthers, the building blocks are there, man. You want to say this team wins, you know, 8 games or so, 7, 8, 9 games? I think that's kind of reasonable. I'm not totally sure of their schedule, and you have to remember they're still the Panthers. They're still prone to getting blown out by whatever they were, 30 by the Patriots. But they've had a couple nice wins here. They've strung a few along. They've won 3 of their last 4. But you just have to be careful because they're not totally ready to win yet. So that's why 9 feels too high to me. 8 feels like the peak. If they're 8 and 9, I think, all right, good job, Panthers. Come back. Give me another year of everything, and we'll see how this whole story goes. And now I think we can move on. We can end our NFL talk, good 20 minutes in, and we can talk about that UConn basketball, baby. How about it? It feels good watching, you know, UConn basketball on my, you know, Twitter highlights. I couldn't make it to Mohegan Sun. I couldn't watch the games, which was unfortunate, but it was great to see just the UConn basketball be back. Both teams took big dubs, the women and the men. We'll talk about both games. I want to start with the women first just because doesn't it feel like they're just so ready to repeat? Oh, my God. I saw that team. They're perfect. They're well-rounded. They all complement each other well. It was the first game of the year, and they just looked like a well-oiled machine. They look unbeatable. I don't really know how you can stop them. AZ Fudd, Sarah Strong, Sarah Williams, just inject it into my veins. It's perfect. They are an unstoppable combo, and they have enough bench depth to get it going. This isn't some, you know, stars and scrubs roster. This is a team from top to bottom built to win another championship. I'm so very excited. They are the number one team in the AP poll, as they should be. I think they will keep that all year long. And I'm even trying to remove my UConn, my obvious UConn bias right now. I still, just looking at them undeniably, I believe they are the best women's team in the country. I don't think they just did a perfect job. You know, everyone was so, worried because they lost Paige Bueckers, who's been the face of the franchise for years now. And I think they filled her spot very, very easily. With AZ and Sarah, I think they've both looked fantastic in their first game. They talked about how AZ Fudd was more of a leader now this year. She's taking on a leadership role that was left up for grabs with Paige going to the WNBA and being the rookie of the year. Clap it up. Great job for her. But, I mean, these women just look unstoppable. I am very excited to continue watching them, keep seeing how they play the game. It's all pros for me with them. I really don't have anything else to say. If we want to switch to the men's side, it was a little less pretty. They still got the win, though. They were actually trailing for a little bit by 3 points, which, you know, was a little, not scary, but interesting. They still have a lot as well. They have a lot of new pieces, as do all teams, but they're still ranked number 4. I still think this team is fantastic. I am curious how those freshman big men are going to fill into the rotation a little bit more. I want to see a few more games of that, but a guy who's still a big, not a freshman, Alex Caraban, played fantastic. They relied on him. They needed him to show up, and hell yeah, he did. He had 17 and 11, a double-double. He played out of his mind fantastic. We really have to start discussing. He's an all-time Husky, right? He's got 2 championships under his belt. He's a redshirt senior. He's played here forever. He's one of the all-time Huskies. I think you can't deny that at this point in his career. Solo Ball's also up there. He's a, you know, outlandish three-point shooter, just an absolute bombs away type of guy. We're really witnessing 2 greats right now. I really don't want to take that for granted at all, and I want to remind you, don't take that for granted at all. They still won. I thought they looked good as well. They just didn't look as good as the women did against their BC team. Regardless, it's exhibition. You have to take everything with a little grain of salt just because we're still a little bit away from the start of the real season. They play Michigan State. I think that'll be a nice one. That's a ranked opponent. That's a little more revealing to me in my eyes. We can see what we can pull from that game. Hopefully it's a little more real, and hopefully it's just as positive, if not more positive. It's basketball season. It's right there. It's a little colder outside, and that's how you know we're getting to that time. I don't really have anything much else to say when it comes to this. Thank you guys so much for listening, following along with me. I'm having a great time recording this podcast, just 4 episodes in. And I will catch you all next time. As always, roll skis.